And we are Burning Down the House, here every Wednesday at 8 Eastern Time on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I am Curtis B. Wayne, your host. And this episode of Burning Down the House is brought to you by Fairway Markets in Manhattan and Brooklyn, a really fabulous source for high-quality food at an affordable price. I especially like their 125th Street location. You go in the meat department, it's not just a department. You're walking into the meat locker. You're there with big brontosaurus cuts of beef. It's a fabulous experience. It's a design experience. It's one of those places that you imagined that might exist, but yet now it's made real. Thank you, Fairway. And this episode, we're going to have a little potpourri, a little magazine, like many of the other programs here at HeritageRadioNetwork.com. First up, and some interesting news from the world of design. I think many of you know of Caesar Pelli, formerly the Dean of Architecture at Yale, at the Yale School of Art and Architecture. Well, his firm, Pelli, Clark Pelli of New Haven, has designed a new science center in Hartford, and it was a design-build project, which means that the architects and the builders work together collaboratively. Now, collaborative work has been much bruited around as a design-build concept for the last 25 years, and certainly there have been builders before that who happened to be architects, like John Portman, who did a lot of hotel work. But in this case, the building has great defects. There were structural problems. There were leakage problems with the curtain wall and the roof. Well, and that's not unusual. But the amount that is being sought by the state of Connecticut is really something as extraordinary. In the tens of millions. Let me see if I can find this program here. Can you stop it? Okay. Ah, yes, here we go. Science Center sues architects, Dateline Hartford, Connecticut.
For
tens of millions of dollars. Now in Connecticut, a building should have a structural peer review, and it seems that something went wrong there. Now, a solution to design-build successes, or we'd like to hope that they will be successes, is a notion called IPD, Integrated Project Delivery. And that was pioneered by the American Institute of Architects chapter in San Francisco. And they put together some documents that are being reviewed right now by National AIA. And so it's not really widely known of in the East Coast. But the notion of IPD is that there's a management committee, and all of the parties, the architects, the engineers, the owners, and the builders work collaboratively and share responsibility across the entire project management and delivery. And this is different from the traditional or standard approach in which the architect designs. The engineers are usually subordinate to the architect. And then plans and specifications are prepared, and then they go out for bid, and the contractors extract quantitative analyses, and then they build it. And the owner pays the contractor on a monthly basis. But in this approach, everyone's working together. And so the idea is that the contractor does not build in hidden contingencies in his estimate, what I like to call the fear factor. And this can be substantial, because especially if it's a fixed sum agreement, fixed sum for a fixed scope of work. But now, when you get into the world of design-build, the budget is flexible and it works along with, as you are doing the drawings, you're also figuring out exactly what the detailing should be, exactly what the materials should be. And so the contract documents, that is to say the drawings and specifications, aren't really complete until the building is complete, because there are decision chains that evolve. Now, another approach, which we'll talk about in a future program, to having more surety about how things work together in the real world of construction, is to use a computer-driven software platform. These programs, and there are several, one is Revit, another is ArchiCAD 13. It's called BIM, or Building Information Modeling. And so as you are building the drawings, they are not just two-dimensional plans, but rather three-dimensional representation of every element in the structure going together. And the BIM systems will identify if two objects attempt to occupy the same space, which is usually a coordination problem that only shows up later in construction. Sometimes it's all right, though, for two things to intersect. For example, you can have pipes that actually penetrate a beam, or conduits for electricity, or in an industrial building or a commercial building for low voltage, even if you might have a requirement to isolate these things. But they can go through beams. We can cut holes through them in the right places. So this is not unusual. And so the BIM system will highlight areas where there are coordination questions that come up. But BIM is not a solution, because you still have to have discernment when it comes to exactly what it is that you are deciding to put into the drawing. You can, very good case in point, a lot of information these days, as a result of the CAD revolution, that's CADD, computer assisted design and drafting, which started out using very expensive computers in the 1980s and then migrated to personal computers, and now is the standard pretty much throughout all the world and all practitioners of architecture and engineering. But with CAD, because of the internet, there's just an enormous amount of graphical information that is available, made available by manufacturers. And the way that buildings get drawn is that the junior people in the studio assemble the details, and so they will have at their disposal many, many details that were drawn by the manufacturers. Now, the manufacturers tend to illustrate in high resolution, a lot of detail, their particular product. What happens where the process falls down is that, for example, case study, young, enthusiastic architect that with whom I worked in a very large architectural practice in New York, was always drawing a certain window type, and the manufacturer was Cornier, very large aluminum and glass sort of manufacturer. And Cornier's details show that when at the edge, say the jamb, which is the side of a window where it meets other types of construction, in order to keep rain, wind, vapor, and also with them heat from infiltrating around the edge of the window, they were showing that you would stuff in a foam rod. It's called backer rod. It's foam, like much like the stuff that your electronic goodies come in, you know, when you unpack them on Christmas and they're in a foam container. Very much like that. It's compressible, but still rather robust. And so a backer rod with caulking over it. And that's it. Now, that's not enough. But you wouldn't know that if you looked at Cornier's details, because Cornier is not in the flashing and caulking business. They're just showing your detail of this is the profile of the jamb of their window, and they give you the least common denominator way of sealing it off from adjacent construction, which might be brick or stone or metal panels bent into shapes. But there are standard repositories of this information. The granddaddy of all repositories is, of course, as we know in the United States, the Architectural Graphic Standards, which is published as a fairly thick, you know, about 3-inch thick book. It's also available on CD-ROM. It may even be available online through subscription by now. I haven't looked online. I prefer to look at my various editions of the old AGS, as we call them, or graphic standards, because there still is a place for hard copy. You know, we can read in hard copy. I mean, this is the whole argument about the Kindle, you know? Can we read as well on an electronic device as we can read in hard copy? And I say no. The eye takes the whole gestalt of the page, the whole image, in a way that you do not have on an electronic electroluminescent screen. But I'm getting a little off the point here. There are repositories of information, such as the Whole Building Council. Now, this is a consortium of different agencies, federal and private, and they have come together, and their own in-house experts have compiled much, much, much information pertaining to the best practices. And they will tell you that when you have a window in a wall, that at the sill you need a sill flashing that catches the water that gets down into the cracks around the window and spews it out of the building. It's a sill flashing. And the sill flashing should have upturned ends. Those are called dam flashings or dam ends, D-A-M, not D-A-M-N. Although, believe me, it's pretty D-A-M-N if they're not there because your building will leak. And then also there should be jam flashings running all the way up both sides, closing off the cavity, because in these days almost all exterior walls are cavity walls. And water will get in there if you only have backer rod and caulking. But when you're young and you believe in authorities and you don't have the discernment to know which authorities to turn to, and you don't even know about the Whole Building Council, because frankly, a lot of us don't know about it. I know about it because my job is to continually do research, and I only found them recently. And a lot of people they're just reluctant to go and pull off the copy of Graphic Standards from the shelf and look at it because it's old-fashioned. It's just a book. It's not available online, and you can't swipe details with such felicity as you can from an online source to plug into your computer-aided design drawing. And so, as a result, what's happened is we've had a revolution. It's not necessarily been a happy revolution, because with the ease of importing information from many sources, we've lost a certain culture of learning from people who know more than we, especially in the studio. Especially when in the studio, everyone has their personal computers and everyone has their personal screen. And in many, many practices, the people who are doing the drafting also have their personal audio track from their iPod or MP3 player. In the old days, in the 20th century, we would have a radio, and we would have great rows over what sort of music to play, but still, we'd all be listening to the same music, and it would be in the background, and as we were drawing on paper or on Mylar, we'd be talking to each other about the things that we were working on, or, you know, the date that we had last night, or who's going out with whom, but anyway, there would be a constant communication soundtrack of us talking to each other, because when you're drawing, you can draw and talk at the same time. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. The CAD revolution has brought a revolution of isolation. And the conversation that used to happen that was instructive and educational, where the studio became a continuing education source. It's gone. And I'd like to play some revolutionary music just for a moment, if you would boot that up. This revolution swept away everything that came before. It promised to have great, great potential. But instead, we've left ourselves ignorant. It's time, really, truly, for a counter-revolution. Pull it up, please. Volunteers of America. I'm ready to volunteer. Let me tell you, there's a place for hard copy. This is Burning Down the House, in which we discuss and shred conventional wisdom about the built environment. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host, and we're brought to you by Fairway Markets, all the ingredients of a good life, which actually should be the motto for our station, because we've got everything here. We've got culture, we've got food, we've got snacky tunes. So we have many, many programs. Listen, because we're now 24/7 live streaming audio, Heritage Radio Network. Okay. What are you telling me?
We've got Ryan on the line.
Ryan's about 10 minutes too early, but we could jump into him. Let's get Ryan going. That's right. We can move it around. We like a little bit of chaos in the studio. Ryan.
Yes.
Hi there.
Nice to speak with you.
Welcome to Burning Down the... How do you pronounce your last name, Ryan?
Enschede.
Enschede. And you're an architect in Brooklyn.
Indeed.
I invited you on because I got this really compelling email from you just yesterday, in which you wanted us all to talk to our city council representatives. I'll let you take the stage. Tell me what's going on that we really need to know about in the world of the built environment.
Well, in the last 24 hours, they actually passed it. This was the...
Wait. You're a little too far. Let's back up. There were four bills before the city council, correct?
I had emailed about what our dear mayor, and together with, I guess, Speaker Quinn, has put together and called the Greener, Greater Buildings Plan. And
who could be against that?
Well, I've followed along to some extent, and I sort of believe the rhetoric. It's it seems like a good thing.
And the idea is to do what with what?
Well, there's a couple pieces of it. And my understanding is that the first piece is creating a New York City specific energy code, rather than currently we're under the state energy code.
Right.
Then the next piece is...
And by the way, for people who are listening from overseas and out of town, because I don't know if you realize, we have listeners from as far as away as Australia and also in Scandinavia. About 1,000 people are listening every week. Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening. In New York, frequently asserts itself because it's, you know, it's the 1,000-pound gorilla and just decides not to obey New York state laws. It passes its own because it can, because there are more people who live here than most of the rest of the state, right? So we have our own building code, and now we're going to have our own energy code?
Well, it sounds like it. I think I'm not probably the most articulate spokesperson there is for the legislation, but my understanding is that they are closing a loophole or two which allowed retrofits of equipment to be replaced in kind rather than requiring upgrades. But they're also, you know, describing it as New York City's own energy code. So, you know, I can't tell you more than that.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, if old incandescent fixture needs to be replaced, why shouldn't it be replaced with a more efficient CFL or other sort of high intensity discharge lamp?
Indeed.
Yeah, because the first cost might be even the same, and the energy savings would be huge.
Well, and, you know, how many wire glass skylights have you seen around that aren't double insulated? I mean, how much does it really cost to put a double insulated skylight in?
And there are tens of thousands of those, and they're ugly anyway. I mean, let's be real about it. They're butt ugly, you know?
Yeah. Well, but there's a certain charm to the real old New York City look occasionally, you got to admit.
Yeah, and for that, we'll always have the stage set of Saturday Night Live to remind us how it was.
Well, shall I run through the other pieces?
Yes, please.
I mean, to the extent that I am familiar with them, they're requiring, this is all for buildings, I think, larger, well, they are. It is for buildings larger than 50,000 square feet, and my understanding is they've done this because they're pursuing the low hanging fruit, which you know I agree with. I think is right on the money.
Yeah, but a 50,000 square foot building is not very big. There are plenty of apartment houses on the Upper West Side.
Sure.
That are really technologically in dire straits, and this would then compel those owners to have to comply with these new standards of replacement. Now, wasn't there a part of this that also required an energy use audit?
Right. So as I understand it, they're requiring a benchmark of annual energy use, and then they're requiring an audit. So everyone who is the owner of a building larger than 50,000 square feet is required to have an audit done. And initially, they were requiring that if I understand it correctly, the upgrades which the audit revealed to be the quickest paying back, or the ones that, you know, have the shortest payback period, they would actually be required to do. And I think that's the piece that they took out. The mayor backed off on a piece of it, I think, last Friday, late last week. And I think that's the piece that they weakened it a little, or maybe a lot. I don't know. But
it just passed today, right?
But it passed.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll have to do some research on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think there's also some financing, but it sounds like maybe the money they have available for the financing wasn't as great as they thought.
Yeah, so, wouldn't it be nice if some of the stimulus money came to us for things like this in the existing stock of construction? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Well, you know, Obama's speech, when was it, yesterday, the day before yesterday? He's talking about building weatherization. So who knows? Maybe there will be more, you know?
That would be lovely.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in New York, as everyone who's been around for a while in the greater New York metropolitan area knows, in the older buildings, there's a very crude way of administering or providing heat in the wintertime. Usually there are boilers that are on a timer. When it gets colder, the super sets a timer to go on more frequently. And when it's warmer, which might be a couple days later of broiling too much heat, the super will get around to turning back the timer. And our friend of the program, Henry Gifford. Do you know Henry?
I can't say that I know him. I've met him and been to a couple of his presentations.
Well, that's about as much as I know him. He's been here, and we spoke. Henry calls the heat modulation system for buildings like that the window stat. It gets too hot, you open the windows, the heat goes out. In the end, the landlord's paying a lot of money for fuel that's just heating up the atmosphere. And you know, it's a peculiar thing because it's quite easy on even steam systems to put individual thermostatic valves on the radiators.
Yeah.
And so this new law would encourage that to happen. And and you know, through just a who would be qualified to do these energy audits? A registered architect, or do you have to have other credentials like LEED AP certification?
Well, I don't know. I suspect that I don't know if that's been worked out, if it has been, or even if it hasn't been. I suspect it would be something like the state's incentive programs come through NYSERDA. I would imagine, and NYSERDA relies on a BPI certification, and I would imagine they would do something similar.
What's BPI?
BPI is the, I think it stands for Building Performance Institute.
Okay, now NYSERDA is the New York State Energy Resource something.
I think it's I forget the acronym as well.
Anyway, it's a state agency that promotes and enforces certain energy standards.
Energy Research and Development Authority.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you get state money, you have to conform to NYSERDA regulations.
But it's the gatekeeper, I think, for state incentives for energy, incentives.
That's great. Yeah. You know, and their rules are not really hard to live with. Certainly, for example, one of their rules is that if you have a parking structure under your building, you don't heat it. You know, just insulate the structure above. It's not like the old days where there'd be a gas-fired space heater blowing heat into the garage, and every time the garage door opened, if in fact there was a garage door, which many parking garages under buildings in New York don't have, that heat just goes out. So instead, under NYSERDA regulations, if there are parking attendants, they'll have a warm room to be in when they're not parking and unparking cars. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that is eminently reasonable, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that, I really think that the city is right on with this angle that they're pursuing. I mean, I really think that it's very clear to me, at any rate, that our existing buildings are what we have to work with. They're not going away, and I think the incremental gains that you'll get from the occasional new building that's built to a newer, higher standard, I think is while it's great. I think it's insignificant, probably. I mean, I wouldn't even say probably. I think you could probably. I think it's just not going to get us to where we need to be. And I think those buildings have a great role, perhaps, for their inspirational qualities, if nothing else. But I think that it's clear that our existing building stock is what has to be upgraded. I mean, who's going to knock down, I'll volunteer my home to be knocked down and start over. I mean, it's just not. Our buildings are with us, and we have to make them better.
Yes. One of the big pieces about sustainability is don't tear it down, fix it up, adapt it, adaptively reuse structure that's already there instead of a scorched earth or tabula rasa approach to construction, which has been really the American way of life since the very beginning. When the British came to New Amsterdam, they tore down Dutch buildings and they put up British buildings. And then we tore down the British colonial buildings and we built Yankee buildings. And so it goes on and on and on and on. So with a little bit of science across all the many, many buildings that we have, we can affect great changes. I want to play a little music now. Stay on the line. I want to talk about the Copenhagen Summit with you.
Oh, now you're really going to get me out of my league.
But that's okay. No, I don't want White Rabbit. I want She Blinded Me with Science. Thank you. Back to Burning Down the House here at Radio Brooklyn. We're your own private pirate radio station. Actually, if you've seen pirate radio It's nothing like real radio. We don't cue up records by just dropping the needle on the on the LP. You got to cue it up. You got to back it up. You got to know it's exactly 2 seconds that it takes to get up to speed before you get to where you want to be with Chad and Jeremy. So anyway, pardon my rant. Ryan, you still there?
Yes, still here.
Hey, did you see that movie?
No.
Oh, well. Okay, well, if you see it, you can picture me as, I don't know, Philip Seymour Hoffman without the beard. Otherwise, it's just as ad hoc and fun as being in a converted trawler in the North Sea, except that we're in converted shipping containers in East Williamsburg. But one of our other Heritage Radio Network hosts, Katie Kiefer, who's the co-host of The Main Course every Sunday, had some questions for you about what you really think the future of energy.
Yeah. Oh, my mic is on. Okay, good. I was wondering, being as how I'm in a rent stabilized apartment, but overall, I'm capital improvements are always a big issue in buildings, and so when buildings retrofit to increase their green their green score, I guess.
Right.
How much of that is going to be passed on to the consumer, whether you're in a rent-stabilized, rent-controlled, or even just an open market situation as a leaseholder?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a good question, though, isn't it?
I really don't know.
I mean, how do we calculate what we save in terms of, heat versus what we pay extra to our landlord for creating these new systems for us or implementing these new, whatever they are,
or
strategies
might there be an offset because the landlord's saving so much money by not, for example, illuminating hallways that no one is in.
Or heating hallways.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I think there's probably an answer to that question. I'm confident. I mean, I've followed along enough to I think that those sorts of questions have been looked at, but or maybe they haven't.
Imagine.
But I think I imagine they probably have. I think they have. I think I'm just I just don't know.
You don't have those facts and figures right at hand.
But that's okay. I mean,
we forgive you.
Although you had the
since
you
that came out of left field. Yeah.
The urge to be an activist and get us all to get these passed doesn't mean that you have to know book and scripture of every aspect of these laws. I mean, after all, that's what lawyers are for.
But that is an interesting question. I mean, to me, that's always the question in terms of whether it's your foodways or your shelter or your transportation. It's like, how do you sell it to the public? And so by selling it to the public, everybody wants a bargain, right? So how do you make people realize that, okay, if they pay an extra $10 a month in rent, and it offsets the cost of something else. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, how do you... You have to make those calculations, and you have to be able to present them, I think, to the public in order to make these equations make sense and make people really want to participate in these programs. Because otherwise, you're just going to, people are just going to say, right, but not
but
in my backyard.
This program's going to be mandatory because it's now been passed into law.
Okay, then.
I think we think in economic terms, and it's it's clear that that's what moves us oftentimes. I mean, not by any means exclusively, but when it comes to things like this, I think it's, I personally have no problem with thinking of these things in economic terms or translating them into that sort of
I think
language.
That's kind of what has to happen, because if people don't understand the economics, then they don't understand, because it's very hard to project into the future, right? It's like we've been hearing about global warming for an awfully long time. And all of a sudden, now it's becoming sort of scary because the warnings are becoming more dire. But it took until people really started hearing that message before they started thinking, wow, there is an impact to the water bottle that I'm carrying around that, I'm going to throw away at the end of the day, or the fact that I open my windows so that my apartment isn't overheated.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah. No argument.
Now, Ryan, and the project that you work on, do you try to urge the owners to have more sane energy management technology?
I do.
Is that a hard sell?
Well, Yeah. It's something that my goal is to at least be able to put it on, well, my goal. I put it on the table, at least. And then people can do with it what they will. But I do find there's
You don't have control over your projects like Frank Lloyd Wright or I do.
Isn't that,
you don't get in there and crack that whip.
I
know. These are not times to be whip cracking. No,
quite that level of bombastic personality, I guess.
Just stick around with us, baby.
Yeah. Well. I find there to be interest, but also, you know, a bit of that glazed over look also, often as not.
You know, that is a hard part of being an architect, because you have to be an educator.
Well, what do you mean by the glazed over look? I got to back up there for a second. What do you mean by the glazed over look? So you say, well, it would be better for you, and it would be, you know, probably more efficient for your building if you did this, but it will cost you X much more up front. And do they
let him talk, Katie.
I'm sorry.
I say, you know, you want a new kitchen, great, but really you should be, you know, hiring somebody to do an energy audit and looking at what you can do to reduce the energy use in your building. And that's not what they've necessarily brought me there for. And it's not necessarily what, you know, it feels to me a little bit like, you know, if you're, you know, you're approached by someone who wants your signature on the street for something or other, and, you know, yeah, you're somebody who wants to, the guy who wants to talk to you about the injustice and wherever, and, you know, I mean, that's the glazed over look kind of that I feel like I do get. I mean, I think that's where the economic piece is a valuable motivator, because it makes penetrates past that.
Yeah, it makes it concrete as opposed to just sort of a nice idea, which I could or could not, you know, pay attention to.
I mean, I think that the costs of these. You know, the cost of the window stat, you know, of the open window with energy going out through the window, not only are to the building owner, but I think in a larger, if you back up, I think those costs are very real for everyone. I believe that. Perhaps not everyone does, but I think that those costs are there, and I think that we don't perceive those costs because the cost of energy is subsidized. I think that there's the infrastructure and the economic structure of our country is such that those things really don't come to us. We don't feel those costs. And, you know, this something like this piece of legislation that they just put, I hope, I mean, the reason why I sent out that email supporting it and urging people to support it is that I hope that it will begin to change that paradigm and make it so that we do have a more direct understanding and we feel the pain a little bit.
Yeah, well, just empirically, I've looked at the example of the Swiss. They have the highest savings rate in the whole world, and they're extremely frugal in strange kinds of ways. They are willing to pay for the highest quality paper, watches, clothes, construction
and food,
yeah, and yet they're able to save. So there's something to be said about getting quality and then living with it, because it doesn't wear out. And in the case of then buildings, if they're economical to run, everybody wins, because maybe then, gee, wouldn't it be great if rents went down because it was less expensive to operate the building, or profits increased, if there are any, for landlords, and they could make willing upgrades to their buildings, paint them, paint the hallways a little more frequently, or replace that creaky old front door because it's nicer. I mean, that might be an unintended result of reining in useless, pointless energy waste. I mean, that's a happy idea in this revolution of energy awareness.
I certainly think that that's what they're hoping will happen.
Yeah.
That there will be, you know, some cost savings in a very just simple, pragmatic way for the people who own buildings in New York.
Yeah, well, the facade inspection laws, for example, were a thing that was well overdue, and it took a few people getting, unfortunately, killed by pieces of buildings falling off and clocking them on the street. And I think this is one of those landmark, makes perfect sense sort of developments that we can only hold our breaths and see how it turns out.
But is there a forum where say, you know, architects or people like yourself or, you know, who are involved in this, is there a place where they can, is it easy for you, let's put it this way, to get some kind of recognition or some interest, say, in the media, to educate the population at large? I'm not talking about the New York City population, because I think there's enough people, you know, especially in the Northeast where we pay high costs for energy anyway. But like out farther out into the country, like how can we push this needle along in other parts of the country?
What we're doing right now.
Tell me.
You think that New York leads the nation? Well, you know, in Chicago, Richie Daley, the mayor there, has gone whole hog in terms of promoting green practices with city construction, and certainly Chicago,
and green rooftops.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely, everywhere. Yeah. Now Chicago is sort of an aberrant child. They took the notion of Tammany Hall and they pumped it up with lots of money. It's like Tammany Hall, and, you know, for those of you outside of New York, Tammany Hall was the ex officio political machine that got people elected. Boss Tweed, the unelected head of Tammany Hall, ran New York for decades. In Chicago, the political machine is fearsome, and now the mayor, Richard Daley of Chicago, is totally on the green bandwagon, to the extent that for a while they tried to ban foie gras because it was cruel to ducks. But
don't distract the
the listener. well, this is a food and culture radio station. We can't have a particular. We can't have any episode of burning down the house without mentioning some sort of food.
I don't want the, is it PETA? The animal rights.
The PETA people to start protesting? We would love PETA to protest us. Oh, absolutely. We would love PETA to be outside.
No, we wouldn't.
Protesting our treatment of heritage
food. Of heritage pigs, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I do appreciate that you came on. It was very brave of you. It's a wild and crazy world now with the internet radio going everywhere, more prevalent than even shortwave. And I think you requited yourself wonderfully well. I just have one more question for you.
Yes.
Do you have a Rietveld chair?
No.
Really? Oh, how interesting.
But get this. So I have a friend who designed a chair in school.
Yes.
And it was the most uncomfortable, horrible, just coffin-looking sort of a kind of a thing that you could imagine. And it fit me so well. It was the most comfortable chair I ever sat in.
For you, it was comfortable.
It was perfect. It just didn't look comfortable.
But it works.
But I do not have a Rietveld chair.
I just wondered because, as you know, there's a companion blog that we have that goes along with the program. And we talked about the Rietveld chair in one of our sessions where we're talking about industrial design. And someone wrote in and said, when I'm sitting in my Rietveld chair, I want to think about Mondrian, damn it. And I thought perhaps that might... He might have, or she might have been you, but I stand corrected.
Sadly, my chair is far from a Rietveld chair. unfortunately.
All right. Would you like to plug yourself now that you've given us many, many minutes of your time? Do you have a website?
I do. It's my name. It's RyanEnchity.com. And
how do you spell that, Ryan?
That's the problem. R-Y-A-N is, of course, Ryan. Enchity is E-N-S-C-H-E-D-E. And what I am really most interested in doing is finding and developing sustainable solutions that are adapted to New York City's own particular climate and built conditions.
Wow.
And kind of taking the word sustainable seriously and drawing the poetry out of that, you know, because I'm not so into the, you know, there's a poetry there that I think has been, we've lost our connection, you know, you might say, poetically to our natural environment. And, I think that's something that is as valuable to regain as the, you know, the energy efficiency stuff.
Yeah, from our mutual friend Ty Call at Perkins Eastman, I've heard that actually you're really quite expert in siting, which for the lay people out there means how a structure is positioned in the landscape, the exposure of the elements, and so forth.
Well,
is that so?
I'd be happy to be expert in anything.
well said.
I mean, I guess.
There's a lot to be done with that, even in an urban context.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I see a lot of, and I'm sure you also are aware of this, is you see buildings which are oriented to the cardinal directions in a way that just is a killer.
Sure.
You're gonna get, you know, you have an all glass wall that's facing west, and you know that that's just not going to be, it's, let alone energy efficient, it's not going to be a comfortable place to be.
Yeah, right.
But it's
but there are solutions for that. You know, the there's a new building that was put up by the related companies at Rockefeller Park down in Battery Park City, and there, you know, one Rockefeller Park building there has triple glazing on the west-facing walls, which is a good start. Although, you know, had it had less glass, it probably would have been better.
It would have been cheaper?
Yeah, absolutely. Brick is cheap compared with three panes of...
That's what I'm thinking. So in other words, the designer didn't really take into consideration at all how that site was oriented and
it's my impression that the triple glazing really was sort of an orthopedic afterthought.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
You know, like, oh, I'm sorry we crippled you. We'll give you a really nice brace.
We blinded you.
Well, you've been a good sport. We'll have to have you come back. You'll have to come into the studio sometime. I think you'd like it here. We're just going to close out now, guys. And
thanks very much, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
This has been Burning Down the House, brought to you by Fairway Markets, all the ingredients of a fabulous life in Manhattan and now in Red Hook, Brooklyn. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. Also co-hosted with Katie Kiefer, co-host of The Main Course every Sunday at noon for 2 hours. 2 hours. It's the blockbuster of Heritage Radio Network. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you again real soon.